Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
Anna Daly in for Andrea today. And Dr. Nina Burns, GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic, is with me now to answer all of your questions. And as usual, Nina, they have flooded in, so we'll try and get through as many as possible. My wife has little yellowish bags under her eyes from high cholesterol. She takes a statin and also had her gallbladder removed 10 years ago when this started. What's the best way to remove these bags?
So
is this something you've seen before?
Yeah, they're common. They're called xanthelasma.
Okay.
And you might sort of, they almost look like a bit of yellow plaque, often just sitting under the skin, often just under kind of the inside of the eye, sometimes above the eyelid. And they can be annoying because people consider them unsightly. They are, you know, if we see them in someone who hasn't had their cholesterol checked, we're first of all checking their cholesterol.
Okay, so you'll see that, you'll recognise that in people.
Yeah, it's one of the things we'll notice. I mean, in theory, as the cholesterol comes down, they should reduce because they're deposits of cholesterol. But unfortunately, that's not always the case. I had to actually check. I think you can get them lasered, actually. So some people will want them done. But I've never had anyone who actually specifically had to have them removed. So it's, I suppose it's very much a cosmetic thing. They're not dangerous. They're not going to cause you any harm. But I guess if they're really bothering you, it's sort of outside my area. But maybe talk to someone in one of the cosmetic clinics or that. I'm sure they can, like any other things under the skin, they can probably have different ways of freezing them or lasering them or something to get rid of them.
But if you bring down your cholesterol levels,
they should reduce a bit. Yeah, they should reduce a bit, but they don't always go away fully.
Okay, and that's the reality.
If you have a lot of them and they're unsightly, I've no doubt that they can be removed the way most other things, but cosmetic procedures aren't exactly my area of expertise. Yeah.
Now, I'm 14 weeks postpartum, had a large postpartum hemorrhage after birth, hemoglobin now 10.2, ferritin 4. At what point do I need an iron infusion / transfusion? My diet, etc. is excellent, focused on iron, not increasing. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, so postpartum hemorrhage is when you have a bleed after you give birth, and you can actually lose quite a lot of blood, and some people do end up needing transfusions. They don't tend to transfuse people unless their hemoglobin is below 8. And also the speed at which it's dropped is another issue that helps them decide if they need a transfusion. So this person has what's called an iron deficiency anemia. Their hemoglobin is down, which makes them anemic. And ferritin is the way the body stores iron. So it's 4 normal, and that would be sort of 15 to 150. So we do want that to come up. I mean, you would start with iron, obviously, in your diet, which this person has. But I would add an iron supplement. An important thing to remember is you actually absorb iron supplements better if you take them every second day. So
really?
A lot of people don't like taking them because they get side effects. But also some of the evidence would suggest, and I know there are ongoing studies looking at this more, but that if you take it every second day, it's to do with the carrier protein with iron, you actually absorb it better. So I sort of say to people, take a good iron supplement, and it does need to be a good quality one. So talk to your pharmacist, take it every second day. The other important thing is do not take it with anything with dairy. Do not take your iron supplement with your yogurt or coffee, milky coffee in the morning. Dairy will reduce the absorption of iron. So take your iron supplement with your main meal without something with dairy in it, and have something with vitamin C there. So some berries or some
orange juice
or something like that. So they're simple things. It's not just about taking it, it's about taking it properly and making sure you absorb it.
Interesting that you say every other day, because we often hear around supplements, be consistent, you know, don't miss it. Whereas this is the exact opposite.
Yeah, and this research, I know that Holly Street I saw were doing a study where they were looking at women in pregnancy, whether they should take the iron every day or every second day. So there are ongoing studies, obviously, in different groups to see how that's going. But in general, what I was advised by haematologists is take it every second day, absorb it better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great advice. I have just found out from an X-ray that I have what's called spina bifida occulta. What is it, and will it affect my mobility? I'm 68.
So people might be familiar with a thing called spina bifida, which is where there's this kind of, when you're forming in the womb, that the spinal cord doesn't necessarily form correctly, both the bones and the nerves, and then the nerves are damaged. So people with kind of severe spina bifida are often sort of paralyzed at birth, or they have lower limb problems. Spina bifida occulta is where it's not at that severe level, but there's, when you were developing in the womb, there's a part of the kind of bones that maybe didn't form completely the way they did, or there's gaps in them. And in theory, it could allow some tethering of the nerves. Now, in the majority of people, they've no problem at all. When we're doing a 6-week check on a baby, we'll often look to see, is there a dimple at the bottom of the spine, or do they have any little hairy patch there, which can suggest that maybe the cord kind of formed a bit later or slower. But if this is picked up at the age of 68, and if the person hasn't had any problems, it's extremely unlikely it's going to cause them any issues at all. So I suppose my short answer would be no, but obviously everybody's different and they should talk to their own doctor as well.
Okay, and monitor it carefully. I get sharp pain in two finger tendons when I grasp anything suddenly for a few months now. No injury. Could it be arthritis? I'm female, age 57.
So I suppose the short answer to that is yes, it could be wear and tear, but it's very hard to say exactly what that issue is without seeing someone and examining them, you know, and we've lots of tendons in our hands, so it's very hard to know which fingers, which tendons are causing problems. Obviously, from a grasp point of view, you know, our index finger, our first finger is one of the most important in that pincer grasp. And so it really does depend on where your hand is affected. And so do go along to your GP. We can do very specific exams of the various tendons of the hand and try and figure out what it is. It could be arthritis. It can be sort of a tendon or a nerve being trapped as it runs through. It's just the anatomy of the hand is a bit complicated. It's like little kind of pockets in the hand and some ligaments and tendons run through others. So you need to kind of have a good hand exam, actually. And
is that an X-ray, Nina?
Well, no, an X-ray is only looking at the bones. So tendons aren't really going to show on an X-ray. So, you know, go along to your doctor. We can often just examine the different movements of the hand and have an idea where the issue is. Sometimes you get MRIs of your hand, not as common. And there are really excellent hand surgeons you can be referred to as well.
Okay, brilliant. Yep. Now, when should I seek help with my knees? I find it very painful to walk down a slope. They often feel swollen, although they don't look it. They sometimes lock as well. Arthritis runs in my family too.
Yeah, so when we're talking about knees, we'd often say to someone like, what's the difference going up and down a hill? Are they giving way or locking? So this person has difficulty going down a hill and the knees are kind of locking. So that can suggest an issue in the knees. So again, would need a more detailed exam. Doctor would decide whether it's an X-ray or a scan. Physios are very good at assessing knees as well. So could be arthritis, could be some damage in the knee if they've ever injured it in the past. It is worth, you don't want your knees locking or giving way because that's an unstable knee.
Okay, and the earlier you do something about it, the better, I suppose, rather than putting it off.
Go along, get examined and get it checked, exactly.
Okay. My 10-year-old daughter is recently constantly complaining of headaches. I don't know if it's puberty, hormones, anxiety, weight, stress in school. Last October was at GP, as the GP said, suspected meningitis. Oh. Well, it says meningitis, but I'm going to say it's... But it wasn't anyway, so let's rule whatever that is out. I thought then it was due to stress with school issues. I was thinking of a blood test. How can I find out if it's more serious, a mental or a physical issue? Any help much appreciated. It is a bit of a minefield, isn't it?
It is. Headaches are so common. Did they say boy or girl? Sorry.
10-year-old daughter.
10-year-old daughter. Okay, so headaches, I guess, you know, when we're talking to people about headaches, we ask a lot of questions about it. When do they occur? So, I mean, if you're thinking stress, is it only occurring in one situation, i.e. does it only occur when they're in school? Does it not occur at the weekends? How are they with the headache? Is it, do they only tell you about it if you ask about it? Or is it something that seems to be stopping them doing things that they want to do? You know, do they seem to be sort of distracted, unable to watch TV? Obviously, you know, for meningitis, it's a severe headache. They can be sick. They come on quite quickly. But there's a whole minefield there. So if your child is sick with a headache, suddenly it's always worth getting that checked out. But this seems that these have been going on quite a while, about a year, I think it says in there. Does it? So
last October was at the GP. So,
So go have a chat with the doctor. They'll ask all the right questions. Yes, it could be vitamin deficiency. Sometimes diets aren't what they should be and you can have deficiency in iron and magnesium and things like that. People can be prone to headaches. It could be muscular, so it can be tension. A thing people often forget and often come with young girls is that they just pull their hair back really tight in these ponytails. And so you can actually get headaches purely from wearing your hair back in really tight kind of scrunchies and stuff. Just that pulling of the hair.
That severe style. Yeah,
so it can cause headaches. So there's so many simple things. It's not always something serious. And it's often, when it's headaches, it's often a mix of physical and psychological, and one tends to roll into the other. But I think in a 10-year-old, if she's been complaining about them a year, it is important to give them attention and get it checked.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Like it is an important consult. Do go to your GP just about that. Don't throw it in at the end of a consult, because honestly, headaches are a good 15-minute consult on their own. So give them the time they deserve.
That's a really good point, because we do tend to bolt on
We do. I had a morning of it. Yeah, I ended up running an hour behind, and I was saying it to people this morning. I said, I never know whether to be strict about time or the amount of things. And some people get upset when you say about lists. But the way I put it to people is, if you come into me in a 15-minute consult with five problems, I have 3 minutes per problem. I can't safely deal with your problem in 3 minutes. You know, sometimes they're quick things, but each problem you're worried about deserves proper attention, and it deserves the time. So I'd always say to people, book a double appointment. You know, tell them you have a couple of issues and give the important things. Don't throw in the thing you're most worried about at the end, because we're not going to be able to deal with it.
I've been guilty of that myself, even having a child that you got now while I'm here.
Yeah,
you know?
And if you're worried enough to go to the doctor, that worry deserves the attention of its own appointment. That's my point.
Yeah,
you're not
getting
the benefit of that being assessed properly if you're trying to throw it in with five other things.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Okay, we all have to change our habits on that. I have a three-year-old girl. She hasn't had a daily nap in about a year. For the last week or so, she's been complaining of being very tired, frequently wanting a nap during the day. She hates naps. From about midday on, this happens. She sleeps 12 hours every night. No big life changes, no other issues. Any sense in worrying about it, or is it likely just a growth spurt? Thank you.
A lot of toddlers are iron deficient. So in a toddler who's unusually tired, that'd be one of the things I'd be looking at, is their diet. Are they getting plenty iron? Are they drinking enough fluids? Are they sleeping well when they do sleep at night? So are they napping during the day because their sleep is broken? That age, they can start having nightmares and dreams. You know, is it a restful sleep when they're in bed? Have a chat with the child, kind of watch their sleep, and then maybe have a chat with the GP. But you can also talk to the pharmacist. You can get good supplements for children as well.
Because I think, and like being guilty of this myself, when you talk to other mothers about child nap patterns, you can kind of get fussed up about, oh, I'm not doing that, or he's not sleeping enough, or he needs to sleep more, or whatever. And really, every child is so individual, aren't they?
They are. And like children do, I mean, a three-year-old does need a good 12-hour sleep. But children are different, and they wake and sleep. And some are light sleepers, some are heavy sleepers. They go through phases different time of year. And in general, we all sleep a bit more in the winter than we do in the summer. You know, the light plays a role. Vitamin D, obviously, in the winter is an important one. And again, with a toddler, if they're not on formula, you know, when we're breastfeeding or when they're on formula, we tend to supplement. But some people forget to continue that when they go onto normal food. But vitamin D is very hard to get in your diet. So there are simple things to look at there that might help. But obviously, if you're worried, go talk to the doctor.
Of course. OK, one quick question before we wrap up, Nina. Is there anything we could do over the counter for high cortisol levels?
I suppose the answer to that is no. You know, how do you know you have high cortisol levels? So, you know, cortisol tends to go up with stress.
This is a stress hormone.
Yeah, so if you kind of go on social media, everyone will talk about if you're stressed, your cortisol levels are high. In reality, we pretty much never check cortisol on bloods. It's only done for very, very specific conditions. And checking cortisol has to be done under very specific conditions, because if you wake up and start jumping around, your cortisol goes up. So what I would say is, what is it you're worried about? If it's stress, you know, that needs to be managed. You need to talk to someone about how to do that.
Brilliant. Yeah. Nina, thank you very much, as
no
always.
Problem.
And you can find Nina on X at Dr. Nina Burns, or check out the website generationhealth.ie for more information. Thank you very much for joining us.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday. On News Talk.